This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. We'll get you covered on everything to do with the Winnipeg Jets. Looking back at last night, looking forward to Thursday night. Also be joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald to talk about the unstoppable Calgary Flames. And Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster, is going to join us at the top of the next hour. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. I say good evening to my colleagues. How are you both, gentlemen?
Yeah, doing good, guys. It's nice to have Richie back in the studio. He was off for a show. And I think we have a goal to talk about, don't we?
I think we might have a goal to talk about. We have a game to talk about that was topsy-turvy, I think would be a fair way of describing it. A horrific second period, a tremendous third period, and then it all came crashing down at the hands of a simple Barrett Jackman wrist shot that probably any of the three of us, given 10 times to save that puck, are going to save it probably pretty close to 10 out of 10 times. Let's start with that goal. Is this the beginning of the end, do you think, for the Winnipeg Jets' playoff chances? Is it a rallying cry for the team, or do you think it's just a goal in the course of an 82-game season?
I think it's a goal in the course of an 82-game season, Drew. If it's, a rallying cry, sure, but they play such tough teams, I'm not sure that's going to really matter. And if it's the end of them, then they're mentally weak anyways, and they don't deserve to make the playoffs. So how do you deal with it? It's a mistake by a goaltender, and truth be told, I know the fans don't like Andrei Pavlik for the most part, and it was a terrible goal. Everybody knows it was a terrible goal, but if there was a terrible error by a defenseman or a forward, yeah, half the time he's covering it up or Hutchinson's covering it up. So that's the way it is in terms of the locker room. You're going to protect your netminder. I think there's some interesting storylines I want to get into after Ezzy, gets in here, but you have to be able to go, ride with it, right? So you're never as good as you are when you're on a winning streak, never as bad as you are when you're on a losing streak. Same idea here, okay? And that's how you have to apply.
Ezzy, your thoughts on the goal last night, and then we'll hear from Andrei Pavlik and what he had to say when he met with the media earlier today.
Well, Richie just touched on it, and it's obvious from anybody's point of view that goal was awful. But what I'm about to say is probably not going to be what most people are going to want to hear. And, listening to some of the callers on H&L, you forget that it was a terrible goal, but Andrei Pavlik comes into the hockey game and he makes some incredibly nice saves and keeps the Jets in the game, which allows them to come back to make it 4-2, 4-3, tie it up, Blake Wheeler on the penalty kill, especially on the penalty kill, the 5-on-3. After Jim Slater took that penalty, Andrei Pavlik made some incredible saves. And now all of a sudden, everybody's grabbing their pitchforks and everybody wants to burn Andrei Pavlik. Not literally, obviously.
also very difficult to burn somebody with a pitchfork.
I think you go back with Andrei Pavlik tomorrow, and I think people are going to be possibly driving off the street right now listening to me say that, but I think it's one game and it's one goal. And I think, you listen to Andrei Pavlik's comments, and I think we're going to play them here tonight. People forget that even though Andrei Pavlik has lost his number one job to Michael Hutchinson, he's still part of this hockey team. He's not going anywhere. Andrei Pavlik's not being bought out between now and the playoffs. And to answer your question, the Jets played well, and I think the most important aspect of last night's game is the fact that they came back in the third period and scored three goals against a team that's very good defensively. Now, as far as Andrei Pavlik goes, the goal itself, he lost track of it. He wasn't prepared. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm not saying that he's the number one goalie. I'm not even saying that he had a good year. But he comes in after have not started for 3 weeks, and he plays excellently, and he had a brain fart, and it happens. It happened to Corey Crawford a couple weeks back. Mm-hmm. It happens to goalies every year. Now, I'm not saying again that Andrei Pavlik should get the majority of the starts here with 15 games left, but I think Michael Hutchinson hasn't played his best hockey as of late either. So I actually think that Paul Maurice should go back to Andrei Pavlik. The chances of that happening are very low, though.
Let's hear from Pavlik, and then Richie will get you.
Hold on. Sorry, before we hear from Pavlik.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Paul Maurice throwing him under the bus.
Sure.
Okay? And Pomeroy's entitled to do that. And there's things that he's, you know, Pomeroy's has done a great job with this team. And media-wise, he's Mr. Cliche. I mean, doesn't say anything of substance. Says the same old compete. We didn't compete. We got outskated. You know, nothing you can really read into. You read into kind of what, you know, what he doesn't say or the tone in which he says it. But the actual words on paper mean nothing. Very little, not nothing, but they don't mean much. So you look at last night's comments. He did not seem happy about the goal. Of course he wasn't happy about the goal. I found it interesting that he essentially told the media, and you see him on, you listen to it on the radio and you see it on TSN, a guy who's visibly upset about the goal but doesn't defend the goaltender, saying, hey, you know, he played a nice game for us. He kept us in the game. That was a goal that I'm sure he wanted to have back, but we need him down the stretch. Didn't say that. I don't know what that means. Does that mean that he doesn't think there's any way to get through to Andrei Pavlik in the room? I'm not sure if that's the case or not. But it certainly, to me, was obvious that he doesn't have confidence in him right now. And if he doesn't have confidence in him, I don't know how the goaltender is going to have confidence in himself. So I saw it as Pomeroy's being very unhappy and not acting within his character. He usually, again, buttons down to the media and is a little bit more. Sometimes you get him right after a game, he's a little bit fired up, especially fired up yesterday. But even the reaction on the goal, on the fourth goal.
The fist pump.
Fist pump. That, yeah, to me is he is not acting. He seems to be a little bit emotionally out of touch of what he usually is. That doesn't mean that's necessarily a bad thing, but players react to your coach. Now, that goes both ways. One way, the players are going to get fired up like he's fired up. Sure. The other way, the players are going to get upset like he's upset.
Well,
and it's a little bit different than he usually does, Drew,
okay,
because usually he's pretty reserved. Very rarely does he show a ton of emotion. I thought yesterday you saw both sides. You saw one end. You saw him go get extremely excited for a goal tied up, understandably down 4-1, but more than he usually would. And then after the game, visibly upset, saying some things that he usually wouldn't say. So did he lose his composure?
It's an interesting point you bring up. Here's Andrei Pavlik, and then as I'll let you chime in on what Richie just brought up, here's Pavlik from today about the last goal.
Well, it was a minute left. I just tried to, I thought he's gonna dump it in, and True was right between us, and then I lost the puck in the stands and just went in. So stuff like that happened. Bad that happened in a bad time.
Did it hit Truba?
No, I don't think so.
Well, and again, he lost the puck. He wasn't ready for it. We know that. You can watch it, and we all watched it live, and we saw the replay. Now, back to what Richie was saying here. I mean, is anybody in this room going to deny that unless Andrei Pavlik makes some of those key saves, the Jets don't have a chance to come back? The Blues could have easily made it 5-3. Right? So I think that's important here.
I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying there, Ezzie, and that's what I think brings Richard's comments even more into focus, is that without Pavlik, the Jets and the saves he made during the third period there, especially during the power or the penalty killing situation, the Jets don't have he doesn't have an opportunity to give up that bad goal. It doesn't matter because the game's out of hand at that point. So if any time Paul Maurice was going to be able to come to his defense, yeah, of his goaltender, it would be that situation, saying, look, the guy made 5-6, solid saves for us just to get us the opportunity, and he chose to not even touch on the saves he made earlier, rather just focus on how bad the goal was. So I think that speaks to Richard's point about Paul Maurice, one, not having any confidence in Pavlik, mm-hmm, and two, sort of throwing him under the bus.
Right, but with 15 games left here, you have a rookie goaltender with no NHL playoff experience, mm-hmm, and Pavlik doesn't have any NHL playoff experience either, but mm-hmm, the point being that they're going to need Pavlik.
You need both of them.
And
that's the point.
Exactly, you need both of them, and I'm not going to sit here and advocate that Pavlik should get the majority of the starts here, but again, it was a bad goal. Everybody saw it, and if you don't think Pavlik felt terrible after the game, and he didn't talk to the media, and Gary Lawless asked him about that, he felt awful. But to put everything on that one, I mean, the Jets played poorly in the second period. The Jets, again, took a lot of bad penalties in the second and third period. Again, I love Jimmy Slater, but you could argue that was a bit of theatrics.
It was a dumb penalty.
From Brian Elliott. But again, you can't take that penalty and to put your team down two men. So again, you look at the hockey game as a whole. It wasn't all about that one goal. And again, if you've listened to the show before, it's not like I'm Andrei Pavlik's best friend here. It's just I'm listening to the station all day and everybody is just, I mean, it's one bus after the other running him over.
Starting with the bus from the head coach, though.
See, that's my take on it. And now, okay, again, Pavlik hasn't been great this year. He hasn't been very good. You need him. Ezzie's point, you need him. You're not going to buy him out before now the end of the season. You need both goaltenders. Hutchinson's not going to play all 15 games.
What happens?
15 left.
What happens?
But he's played poorly. Their numbers are almost the same.
What happens, God forbid, if Hutchinson gets injured in the first round of the playoffs?
Well, they have to get there.
They have to get there first. What happens if he gets injured tomorrow in Florida?
They still have back-to-back games coming up here. Minnesota, St. Louis, and Edmonton, Vancouver. Yeah.
If you're not going to play Hutchinson on back-to-backs, and you would think that they're not going to.
You're letting 4 goals and 7 shots, for God's sake.
I know.
So, I mean, you're going to likely, you're certainly going to need both goalies.
He's been pulled in 2 of his last 3 games.
You're going to need both. That's the point. And you need both of them to be confident. So my point is, Hutchinson might be losing confidence right now, and you don't want him to because he's had a very solid season. Pavlik doesn't have any confidence, guys. He hasn't played in weeks.
3 weeks.
Which he talks about, but that's an excuse. Yeah. I don't love that. I don't like that. But he hasn't played, and the fans do not like him. And if you think he doesn't have an idea about that, you're out of your mind. You don't think he knows, or his friends tell him that everybody wants him out of town? You don't think that plays on his confidence? So that's why, to me, it was even, I kind of feel like the coach's comments are even worse because of that, in light of the fact that he's a guy who the fans don't like. It's kind of like that whole, it's kind of like the Toronto Caberle, you talk to fans and they just want this guy out of town, and it's really, that whole fanatic, you lose the rationale, in reasoning behind some of your, and again, I am not saying here that he's your top 15 goaltender or 20 goaltender in the National Hockey League, but I've never understood booing of your players and hating on your guys. Why do I say that? Because you're a fan of the team, and by voicing your displeasure to a point where the guy loses confidence, and I think they're probably related in some form, he's only going to play worse. And if he's on your team and you want your team to play better, you want to support the guy to make him better. So overall, I think that your concern is, and Ezzie's point about throwing him back in tomorrow, that's not the worst idea. And you up against Florida with Dan Ellis, who's not a very good goaltender, you have a prime opportunity to get him having his confidence back. Conversely, Hutchinson's losing his confidence. You might want to put him in to get his confidence back. I think both of them are going to lose. Either of them is going to lose to Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay can create a ton of scoring chances. So that's going to be a game that which one do you want to keep away from that game?
I think really what we're trying to say here is that you got to stick by your player. You got to stick by your teammate in good and in bad. And again, I think, listening to some of the callers earlier, I understand the frustration. Winnipeg Jets fans want a playoff series this year in this city. I understand that. I understand that better than anybody. I've been here my whole life.
Yeah.
But I think you got to stick by someone when they make a mistake. He made a mistake. He's still part of this team, though.
Well, and Blake Wheeler, quickly. Blake Wheeler totally had his back yesterday. Point that out. Totally had his back in the post-game comments. We can pull it up maybe if Remus is able to pull it up. I'm not sure if he has enough time here. But Blake Wheeler came to his defense, said he made 17 of 18 saves, kept us in the game. That happens. We'll have to get back at it. Give him credit. He's a leader in that room.
I showed it on the ice yesterday, getting the tying goal shorthanded.
On a slap shot.
Yeah, with Blake Wheeler's not known for having a bullet of a slap shot.
That was a big one.
That's for sure. It is a very interesting point you guys make that, for the entirety of the season, the Jets have been very good, and Paul Maurice has made a point of sort of insulating his players from any outside criticism.
That's all he does.
It hasn't come from internal. This was the first time last night, and you saw it. I mean, you saw it last night. You even saw it today when he spoke to the media very briefly, saying it's not a difficult decision who he's going to go with tomorrow in Florida. He didn't want to come to his defense even with the sober second thought of a day later.
That's interesting.
I mean, it tells you that, how do you go to him? I mean,
I haven't heard the audio today. I'd like to hear it.
We'll play it coming back from break after we go to break then. How do you play, if you're not going to play Pavlik at all anytime soon, and that seems to be the case, how do you throw him into the lineup either Monday in Edmonton or Tuesday in Vancouver, 10 days from now, with the last
You may not think you have to, but again.
So you're going to play Hutchinson back-to-back and going forward for the remainder of the year?
I don't know.
It's like you guys have been speaking to.
Goaltender. You want both guys going. They're showing TSN right now, but you want both guys going.
Let's head to break. Here's Blake Wheeler last night that Richard just spoke about defending Andre Pavlik.
That's hard. That's so hard coming in the middle of the game. You're stone cold. And he made some big saves to give us a chance to tie the game. So you know what, no one feels worse than Pav right now, and we need to rally around him, get his head back up, because you know, we don't tie that game without him, and you know, it's a crazy game, you know. Crap, you know, stuff happens.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We are live on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace-of-mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. We mentioned before the break that we wanted to hear from Paul Maurice and his comments today about the starting goaltender tomorrow against the Florida Panthers. Here's the Jets head coach from earlier.
Like with the other team? Hope not. Yeah, I've got my guy picked. I'll tell you tomorrow.
Okay. On that topic, and I'm not asking who's your starting goalie,
yeah.
Did the events of last night make it more difficult to make that decision? Because you could argue that both guys kind of for various reasons.
Yeah. I don't know. So if you have the other scenarios go and we win that game, is that more of a difficult decision? I don't feel it's a particularly difficult one right now. I'm pretty clear on who's starting.
If the Jets win that game...
You're assuming it's going to be Hutchinson then, Drew, by the comments, and we don't know that.
We don't know that for sure. He doesn't admit to it publicly, but I mean, I'm assuming it could be Hutchinson. It's Hutchinson, and maybe he throws everybody a curveball and decides to go with Pavlik against, you know, a guy who's been in the AHL for much of the year, Dan Ellis.
Dan Ellis is not very good.
And he wasn't very good when he was an NHL goaltender.
Yeah, the period with Predators, he's okay, but yeah.
Yeah, nothing to write home about.
He's won a start, though.
Yeah, well, he's 1-0-1 with the in the two games he's played for the Panthers since the night of goalie injuries there against the Maple Leafs a couple weeks ago, 10 days ago.
Yeah, it's the break. Yeah, it was last Tuesday. A break for the Jets for sure.
Sure, especially because there was some thought that Luongo would be ready for the game, and he's obviously not going to be. We'll get to that preview a little bit later on in the show.
Yeah, but Drew, back to those comments, right? Mm-hmm. Dennis asking a very good question. In other words, Dennis's question means that. Were you going to start Pavlik, but that goal changed your decision to start Pavlik? And I think it's a very valid question. I think he's doing his job by asking it. I don't think it's an obvious decision to make. And earlier in the season, you know, Paul Maurice had to kind of juggle what he was saying in the media, going with, remember, the goalie rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's clear that Michael Hutchinson, with 7 consecutive starts, the first time that's happened, Richie, with the way Hutchinson's playing, I don't think it's obvious because, as you said, you've got Florida tomorrow night and you've got Tampa Bay Saturday night. Tampa Bay is one of the best home teams in the NHL. In my opinion, you know how much I like Tampa Bay. They're one of the best teams in the NHL. Mm. So Florida's in a dogfight for a playoff spot. But as you said, they've got Dan Ellis in there. They've got some other injuries. The flu's going through the team. Ekblad might not play, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's obvious. And I don't know if the best course of action, guys, is to play Andre Pavlik once or twice in the last 15 games, because then he's not fresh for the playoffs.
Now, obviously, they're going to say that Paul Maurice would say that if he's only playing Pavlik once or twice, if he even gets that many starts.
What I mean by that is, by the way, not fresh. He's obviously going to practice. I mean, game fresh.
Game ready. Yeah. You know, coming in, you know, cold. Pavlik referenced it twice today when he spoke to the media about having not played for 3 weeks. And you can certainly tell that there's, you know, read between the lines there.
Yes.
And he mentions that because he's not happy about not having played except in a mop-up role, I guess, that one game against Ottawa in 3 weeks. Not having a start in three weeks.
The weird part, if you want to look at it this way, is when they were kind of playing similar, the same amount of time in net, the numbers in terms of Hutchinson's were way higher and Pavlik's were pretty low. And since they've stopped playing as many games as each other, really, Hutchinson's numbers have come down to where Pavlik is. So he's probably thinking, well, when we were playing earlier, my numbers weren't that good. You were giving the other guy, you started to give the other guy more starts. Now that his numbers aren't that good,
yeah,
you're still giving him all the starts. That's his perspective, I would assume.
I would assume, because, I mean, the numbers bear that out, and it's not, you know, they talk about this rotation. The rotation sort of died, really, right after the All-Star break.
Well, that speaks to the whole Paul Maurice giving you whatever he's going to say. We have a rotation, and then suddenly the rotation's only because of the schedule. And I mean, you can't keep track.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, he doesn't want to create controversy. It's not always consistent in what he says, but he doesn't want to create controversy. That's why I thought, again, his comments weren't, I think, intended to create controversy. I thought it was a little bit more of an emotional reaction than anything else.
Which, you know, to your point, you don't necessarily are. You're not upset seeing that because a guy who's normally so guarded and doesn't really give much in terms of information.
Just surprising, that's all.
Yeah, well, the fist pump, you mentioned it and no one's talking about it. But, I mean, that was a pretty ferocious fist pump that he threw down when Wheeler tied the game at 4-all. And, I mean, you know, if the bench is feeding off of him, you know, the bench, you know, the bench knows when the coach is, you know, can't control 100%. Himself anymore.
I'm not
criticizing that necessarily
works, yeah,
for
that. Works both ways. I just found it interesting that was a reaction. So they have a race now, Drew. You know,
yeah, let's talk about the playoff race. Obviously, right now they're in a dogfight. You know, 1 point ahead of the Los Angeles Kings for the final playoff spot. I guess 1 point ahead of the Calgary Flames as well. Both Calgary and Los Angeles have one game in hand on the Jets.
But they don't control their own.
They don't control their own destiny, right?
Yeah.
If they won out and Calgary and Los Angeles each won out, the Jets would not be in the playoffs. And that's the first time in really, I think, I don't even know how many months it's been where the Jets don't control their own destiny, probably since the start of the season for the most part, or after they caught up after that poor start.
Yep.
And it's a function of just, you know, they've continued to struggle since the All-Star break, and they had the bad start after the All-Star break, and they haven't really, they certainly have improved since that, but they haven't picked it up to the point where they were before the All-Star break, going on significant runs where you get as many points as you can, you know, 16 points out of 18 or 18 out of 20. It's just been very middling ever since the All-Star break, and it's finally caught up to them.
Right, and to this notion, Richie, of managing emotions, it's not individuals necessarily that we're talking about, which is the most important the most important issue here. It's the team. And we talked about this on Wednesday, last Wednesday. Actually, it was last Monday because of the trade deadline. Coming out of that LA game, I mean, I think a lot of people left that game thinking, okay, we just beat the defending Stanley Cup champions 5-2. We're going to the playoffs. Forget all the sports club stats and all that. Just the way they played. And and then you have the stinker against Ottawa. And Michael Hutchinson's pulled in that game.
Yeah.
And then how do you respond? You go into Nashville and you play a pretty good game, a really good game, I would say, against one of the top teams in the West. So I'm not worried that there's going to be some type of spillover here. I mean, I think when you talk about emotions, the way you lose, at the end of the day, a loss is a loss. It's not like these guys take losses differently, I don't think. That's my personal opinion. I think they play the game.
Well, the bad teams.
And I'm not just saying the Jets.
The bad teams take them differently. The
right.
Good teams don't.
I'm saying, and this applies to any sport, I mean, you want to win. And when you lose that game and then you wake up today and you're in Florida and you're probably in sandals because it's really nice there. You're not thinking about, oh, I can't believe we lost that. I mean, the fans think like that. Because the fans have emotionally interested, but you know what I mean, Richie. I mean they didn't get a point.
They can go with the flow better than the fans can,
right? But for them, they want those points. And as far as how you lose, I don't think there's going to be any spillover because there wasn't any spillover from the Ottawa game. Aside from that losing streak right after the All-Star break, this team hasn't had really many extended losing streaks. So I'm just saying, I mean, you lost the game, but to me, look at the glass half full. They scored 3 goals in the third period against a very good defensive team. Brian Elliott looked bad yesterday too, Richie. And I know you're not a big fan of Brian Elliott.
Listen to the show, you know that. That first goal he let in?
Also bad.
I mean, there was a few bad ones. I mean, even Blake Wheeler's goal, even though it was a nice shot, he stopped that one. And so you look at the game and you say, okay, we lost. It was a bad goal. Move on. Like, move on here. And I realize we need to talk about this, but as far as, I mean, the sky is falling. Come on.
Well, people would say the sky is falling because, like we said, they don't control their own destiny anymore when it comes to the playoffs.
The schedule is very difficult, Drew.
The schedule is beyond ridiculous. Not beyond ridiculous. The schedule is difficult.
I mean, everybody plays the same schedule in the division, so.
Yeah. And compounding is the fact is that LA's schedule and Calgary's schedule is not nearly as difficult.
And Vancouver, too.
And Vancouver, because they play against the weaker opponents in the Pacific Division. And they also have the Leafs on the schedule, and they have a couple of other teams like that. So the Jets
did, too. Didn't get 2 points.
Of course, though. They didn't get 2 points. Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. Everybody in the West plays the East the same number of times. The Jets have... Look, they have what they have in front of them, and that's not profound by any stretch of the imagination, but you're right, Ezzy. If they play like they played against Nashville, or they play like they played against the Los Angeles Kings, and they play like they played really in periods 1 and 3 yesterday, they should be able to get more points than not. The question is what happens to the teams that are currently right behind them with a game in hand with an easier schedule who can afford probably a game of a letdown. Whereas the Jets for the next 16 games might not have that flexibility anymore.
And this road trip, because you're coming back to a tough homestand.
San Jose, St. Louis, Washington, next week.
That's tough.
Sure.
But it's just these two road games. I mean, you got to split them. I mean, I don't think they're going to be Tampa Bay, but you got to be Florida.
Yeah, especially against an AHL goaltender.
You have to beat him anyways, but mm-hmm. You especially have to beat him with Dan Ellis in net.
Yeah, because you would say that we're better than Florida. So you're
the team. We.
Well, not me. I'm saying the Jets themselves would say that we are better than Florida. Yeah. And so they have to go out there. And, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what... I think you'll see it within the first couple minutes of the game tomorrow, the first 5 minutes. Is there a hangover as a result of the goal? Or are they using it... the sour taste that it left, are they using it as fuel? And I think you'll see it pretty quickly on in the game tomorrow. Because their schedule has not been difficult in terms of the number of games they've had to play. They haven't... I mean, they've had multiple days off.
Teams are catching up to them now. Then they don't play a lot of back-to-backs all year.
They had the least amount in the year in the league all year, and now they have two to end the season.
Not worried at all. I didn't go out and predict that they would win, but if you go back and listen to the Saturday show, mm-hmm. the first game without Little and Buffalo, what did I say? I said they'd be all right.
They were.
So again, I didn't say they'd win, but everyone's freaking out here. No Little, no Buff, I think, is a lot more adversity than a bad goal.
Well, and certainly what they've been able to do anytime they faced adversity this year is respond to it. Mm-hmm. So this is another case of seeing if this adversity and if they're able to respond to it. We'll find out tomorrow, game time 6:30, game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald will join us to talk about the Flames. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
6:30 in the evening, you're listening to NHL Midweek. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. George, good evening, and how you doing?
Oh, we're surviving, thanks.
Attaboy, that's what we like to hear. George, we'll start...
Alternative.
Yeah. let it never be said that we're not nice people on the show, George, because we'll let you answer one of these two questions. It's completely your choice. First question you have a choice of is how the Calgary Flames are still in a playoff spot without Mark Giordano, or the second question you have a choice of answering is, what is the meaning of life?
Well, what are you saying? I mean, it's, crop circles and Stonehenge are easier to explain than what's going on here. I mean, really. It's pretty tough to answer either one of them. I think what it shows you, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to Trent Yanni, who used to play here, and he's assistant coach for the Ducks, who are playing the Flames tonight. We were just talking about the Flames, and he said, you know what it shows? It shows that structure and belief can take you a long way in this league. And that's basically what it comes down to. I mean, Bob Hartley's got them believing, and it is a kind of a magic carpet ride, and the carpet may crash next year, who knows, but when you're on the carpet, you might as well ride it until the magic runs out.
And George, you mentioned Bob Hartley, and the thing to me it's so interesting is that Bob Hartley came to Calgary. When Jay Feaster hired him, he came to Calgary with a reputation as being a coach for veteran players. And then you look at him with this group, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It's weird because, when Brent Sutter was here, they had basically a veteran team, and Brent was known as a coach that, with Red Deer that had coached junior guys and done a really good job on them. But he had a veteran team, and they struggled, and he got fired. And Bob comes in here, and he's just been... he's just been exactly the kind of tonic that they needed. I mean, he's a populist out in front of the Flames logo backdrop when the cameras are on. He's a tough taskmaster in the room, but he's got them all rowing the boat, you know, the same way, to use a cliche, and it's producing results that, you know, have captivated the whole city for sure.
George, there's obviously a lot of players that are having great years on Calgary that we can talk to you about. One of the guys, and he's finally starting to get some recognition, especially with Mark Giordano out of the lineup, it's Chris Russell. He had 15 block shots the other night, and this is his second year in Calgary. And does this just prove that he's even more underrated than maybe some people already thought?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's a question of opportunity and taking advantage of the opportunity. I mean, you know, when Bob got here, and especially the second half of last year, it was kind of like, you know, it was open auditions. You know, if you want to be in the touring production of Caps, you can be in the touring production of Caps if you can dance and you can sing good enough. And Russell, you know, you look at him in the room, and he kind of reminds me of Doug Gilmore, just in his physique, because there's nothing to him, nothing. I mean, he looks like a stick man, and then he's out there blocking 100 shots a night and playing tough. And with Giordano out, you know, he and T.J. Brody and Dennis Wideman are going to have to pick up a lot of significant minutes, extra minutes, if this team's going to make the playoffs. And, you know, he really has been one of the unsung heroes here. His shot blocking totals are starting to get him a little recognition, which is really nice to see.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, talking about the Calgary Flames and their continued hot play that sees them in a playoff spot. George, when Mark Giordano went down with his injury, went out for the year, most people probably thought, okay, that's it for the Flames. It's a nice story. You know, are you at all surprised, or do you think that the team has been using that injury sort of as a galvanizing force, sort of a win one for the captain sort of mentality?
I don't know whether it's that so much. They just, for whatever reason, they just play. I mean, they don't think about ramifications. They don't think. I mean, the beginning of the year, they had a five-game road trip after an opening game loss to Vancouver, and we said, okay, this will do it. This will kill them off, right? Well, they survived that. They went through an eight-game losing streak, which was threatening to hit the 11, which the 1986 team did. This will kill them off. No, it didn't. Mark Giordano goes down in a freak injury, on the Eastern road trip, right in the middle of a seven-game Breyer necessitated trip, and you figure, now they're done. Well, no, they're not. They finished 4-2-1 on the road trip, and at the end of that last game, when they should be dead tired, they come back from a four-goal deficit in the third period to snatch a point out of nothing in Ottawa. So I don't know whether it's rally around the captain so much. He's had a fantastic season. I think they just go out and play. I don't know whether they know any better because there's a bunch of kids on the team or what, but they don't sort of take any consequences into a next game or a next week. They just play, and I think that that's been the key to their success.
George, you know, Giordano is the kind of unquestioned leader in the room. Yeah. Who would you say is that leader now with him out?
Well, I think it's going to have to be by committee. I mean, you know, I mean, he's been a revelation as a captain and a leader and just, you know, an all-around good person. I mean, they couldn't have a better guy to show the Gaudreaus and the Monahans and the Brodies what it's like, to, you know, how it is to be a pro. I think a guy that has played exceptionally well for them, and we thought this was a guy that would be gone by the trade deadline, is Dennis Wideman. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, here's a guy and you're kind of going, oh, yeah, well, somebody will want him at the deadline, and they'll toss him off for a couple of. And now, you know, he's got an A on his chest. I mean, this was a guy that was scratched in the second game of the season by Hartley because he just wasn't doing what Bob thought he should do. And now he's right up there. He's got 41 points. He's playing a ton of minutes. They count on him. He's happy. You can tell in the room that he's content with his role and everything's good. And you know, there's a guy that I think that, you know, will be a guy that sort of steps up. And this is not a role we ever expected Dennis Wideman to take, right? But he's taken it. And that's just kind of the weirdo stuff that's going on around here this year.
George Johnson from the Calgary Herald is our guest, discussing the Calgary Flames and their continued march to the playoffs. The Flames currently holding down third spot in the Pacific Division.
George, going back about 9 days to last Monday, the Calgary Flames didn't make many moves. They traded Sven Berchi for a draft pick to Vancouver, and before that they acquired Mr. Shootout Hero David Schlemko off of waivers. I guess, two-part question, were you surprised that they didn't make more moves? And I guess the second part of the question is, does Brad Treliving look like he made the right decision considering the way they've played since then?
Well, I think that he made the right moves, and he basically came out and said at the time, you know what, and Giordano just got hurt, right? So we're figuring, oh, they got to go out and they got to get a defenseman. But he said, you know what, a lot of the defensemen that were going, that had gone before the deadline, were going for prospects and picks, and he wasn't going to get involved in that. I mean, you know, they were already a success this year. Whether they make it or not, and everyone here wants them to make it, everyone in the city, don't get me wrong, but if they somehow fight to the end and don't make it, people see a horizon, and they can see a glow in the horizon here. So they're kind of playing with house money. So I think he looked at it and said, you know what? This organization got in trouble in the first place by getting rid of picks and getting rid of prospects and stocking up on older players, and I'm not going to do it. And the fact that they didn't do it in the wake of the Giordano injury just shows you how adamant he was. And you know what? As of right now, he's looking. I think he's right anyway. But you know, that was kind of the thinking behind it. We're not going to mortgage our future again. It's just not going to happen.
You look at the race, George, and you know everybody looks at it from the perspective of the city that they're in. Interested to hear your perspective in terms of Calgary. Who do you think is the biggest threat for them in terms of the remaining teams that are in contention?
Well, it's such a schmozzle at this point. I mean, we keep thinking the Kings are going to come up and they're going to make a statement. They won last night and they drew even with the Flames. Calgary's got a game in hand, I think. And you know, you got to think they're going to make it. So I would think you'd have to look at a wild card spot, and you know you're looking at Winnipeg and that game on April the 12th, I think it is, on the Saturday night. Man, can you imagine if that meant the whole shebang? And it might, because you can't see any of these teams pulling away, you know, and hiding or making up enough ground to be out of it. So I think that you know they don't. Bob says they look at the standings and they don't really think about it, and I believe them. You just got to worry about your own business and see how the dominoes fall.
It would be an old, nice Smythe division game to possibly play in game on.
Dougie Smale versus Jim Poplinski versus Ron Wilson versus Paul Reiner. Yeah, it'd be a lot of old stuff going on.
We'll bring back Jamie McCowan and Dale Howarchuk. We'll see if the cross check is healed at all.
Those are good days. I wouldn't mind if you could bring those guys back.
Yeah, it could be some entertaining hockey. George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. He's a frequent guest on this show. George, appreciate your time as always.
No problem. See you guys.
Thanks, George. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Big thanks to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald for joining us. Always a very entertaining guest on this show.
George Johnson used to write for the old Winnipeg Tribune.
Yes, he did. So that's he definitely has probably some conflicted emotions. I know he's he covers the team and he doesn't care who wins, just wants the game to end quickly and so he can make the deadline. But if there's a game April 11th between the Jets and the Flames and it's practically a play-in game for the playoffs, there'd be some conflicted emotions, I suspect. Anyways, this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I had a brisket sandwich from Bernstein's the other day. It was before a Jets game. This is, a couple of weeks back. And I didn't have a lot of time. I swear to God, I swallowed that sandwich in probably about 45 seconds. I didn't even chew. I just swallowed it like a duck.
I believe that.
Yeah, it's not surprising to me in the least bit, to be perfectly honest. You know, it's par for the course, really. I just thought that's how you eat all
incredible.
Your meals.
It was just incredible.
Anyways, yes. Bernstein's Deli is incredible, so we do echo your concerns, but we do recommend people chew. You know, chewing is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. No, no. Normal people should chew.
Yes.
Like, it takes like a lot of years to learn how to just, you know, swallow deli meat.
Remus and I had a good chew outside.
I don't even know what that means, but that's
the gum.
Gum. From Seinfeld.
Lloyd Braun.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Wow,
okay.
Drew,
sorry.
You know,
sorry, I know. I get a little, I'm a little distracted.
Apparently,
as well.
This Larry David play in New York is very well received.
Oh, he was on 60 Minutes.
Yeah. Was he? Remus?
Did you see that on 60
no,
Minutes?
No, I saw it on 60
Minutes. I taped
minutes.
It and I watched it on the weekend. And he goes,
that's what not getting girls,
they're
right?
They're like, what do you think about being on 60 Minutes? Why am I here? Why are you interviewing me right now? And he just starts going off on the interview. Unbelievable.
Do you know what the play's about?
I know that he basically plays himself.
Right, the play's about his lawyer, his lawyer's dad.
It's a few, they're at a shiva, right?
You know what his lawyer's name is?
Lloyd Braun?
That's his lawyer's name, yeah. Like in real life, that's his lawyer's name.
Oh, in real life, his lawyer's name is Lloyd Braun.
Yeah, that's who it's based on, his dad.
Well, looks like Legal Curve's going to have to make another road trip out to New York. So check out the new Larry David play, as if our lives weren't real-life Seinfeld to begin with anyways. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets and the Panthers tomorrow evening in Miami. Puck drop 6:30, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290, also available on TV on TSN 3. Two teams, the Jets have seen them once this year. That was the 8-2 shellacking in January, where the Jets absolutely destroyed the Panthers in what was the biggest laugher of the Jets season so far. You know, simply, Jets, you know, what's your sort of key to the game there with the Panthers, a team that's 6 points out of the playoffs, 6 points behind the Boston Bruins, but they're still fighting for it. They still think they're in it because they play the Bruins three more times this year.
Yeah, and they've been off, Richie, for 4 days now.
Since Saturday, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they won their last game against the Islanders, and, you know, this is an important game for Florida. I think that's Captain Obvious speaking again. But this Florida Panthers team, it's obviously young, and there's tons of talent there. We talked about it during the second segment. Flu bugs going around the team, so we're not sure if rookie phenom Aaron Ekblad's going to play, but we do know that both Roberto Luongo and former Jet Al Montoya are not playing. That's confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan Ellis is going to be in net. And Richie, this is a team, because it's pretty top-heavy, and it relies a lot on the youngsters like Nick Bjugstad and Alexander Barkov, and obviously Jonathan Huberdeau, mm-hmm. who's been in the league now for 3 years. It relies a lot on goaltending. And Roberto Luongo, to me, has been the biggest difference. Sure, you know, getting guys like Juuse Jokinen and Willie Mitchell and Sean Thornton, those veteran guys have helped. But Roberto Luongo has solidified a position that has really been a weak spot for many years now. Since he left, really, Richie, they haven't had someone even close to him. So it's a tough team. It's a very skilled and young team with Bjugstad and Barkov up the middle there. But, you know, the Jets, especially with Luongo out of the lineup, you know, have to be the favorite going into this game.
Have to be able to beat Florida here. You know, Drew, it's a team, you know, I know you trade for Jagr, and as he talks about some of the young players that they have in the lineup, but at the end of the day, if you want to be serious about making the playoffs, you have to beat a team that's really not as good as you are.
Hmm.
I mean, you want to simplify, that's really simplifying it right there, but it's true, especially with the difficult schedule you have. Now, stopping this team isn't as easy as just saying that. You look at their lines, and you know, you have your Nick Bjugstad's really your number one center.
Sure.
Okay? So Bjugstad plays with Boys and Jokinen, and then you have Barkov playing with Huberdeau and Jagr.
Yeah, Bjugstad leads the team in points, 40 in 66 games, including 23 goals for a guy in his second year in the NHL.
Very good. He's a very good skater. He actually plays a lot like Blake Wheeler. A little better of a shooter, not as good of a passer. But that's about the comparable. And he plays center, of course.
Yep. Both Minnesota guys.
A little
of
bit of Jeff Carter in him too, actually, I think. But
well, let's not get carried away.
No, similar. They're similar. But if you know, again, Carter's a different level now. He's older and all that stuff. But those are the kind of guys I would compare him to. You look at their team. You know, overall, the defense clearly without Ekblad, I mean, you're going to be in great shape because their defense just isn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
They have some players that can play, but defensively, you can take advantage of this team on the forecheck. And by that, I mean, you know, a guy like Brian Campbell is going to avoid, you know, physical contact if he can. Guys like Goodbrinson and Mitchell aren't very quick. So you can either get by them and create opportunities or lean on them and create opportunities. You know, Ekblad is able to, you know, really do both. He can move pretty well.
Sure.
And he's physical and he's built like a truck and he's 18. He's like Landeskog. He looks like he's 30. So, and they don't have great goaltending. So you look at the roster as it is. Even if you drop, you have to beat them. You know, matchup-wise, you're fine because they don't really have their third and fourth lines. You know, Peary, Hayes, those guys can contribute every once in a while. But you're talking about two lines of scoring. You have two of your top. You have your top four.
This isn't St. Louis, which runs four lines deep, and you're afraid to put Harrison and Party out on the ice any of those guys.
Right.
I mean, you look at the bottom six of Florida, and there are a lot of heart and soul guys like Derek McKenzie and Sean Thornton, but not guys who will light up the scoreboard in the course of the season.
Well, no, and there's just not as many game breakers as teams like St. Louis have, and so this team is an up and coming team. I think they're sticking around. They've surprised me by sticking around here. Especially with Roberto Luongo out these last couple games, beating the Islanders was, huge for Gerard Gallant and this team.
Mm-hmm.
But to Richie's point again, I think especially a guy like Dave Bolin's been out of the lineup. It's not confirmed if he's going to be out of the lineup again, but this isn't a physical team. It's a very skilled team, very fast team, led by two very young centers. But when you talk about the Winnipeg Jets and how physical and fast they are,
they can take
advantage of this. Like guys like Gudbranson, they're tough physical defensemen. But after that, a few players, Sean Thornton is a physical guy. You mentioned, Drew, some of the heart and soul guys in the fourth line. But when you talk about the guys that are going to be playing the significant minutes, and Willie Mitchell, he won the Cup last year with L.A. Good team here, and they've done a good. Dale Tallon's done a great job to put together a competitive team because last year they were one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
But the Jets really can impose their will on this team, especially considering you've got some significant injuries. Again, for those who weren't listening earlier, there's been a bit of a flu bug going around the team, and that's
right.
Kept guys like Ekblad out.
That is right. Not particularly fast, and not particularly physical.
Mm-hmm.
So. You have it's a must-win game, and every game is a must-win game. I'm talking about the fact that this is a team that you have to beat because you play Tampa, you're expecting to lose that game.
You have so few games on the schedule that you are clearly the better team than the opponent, and this is certainly one of them against Florida tomorrow. Jagr, obviously, what Jagr brings to the table. He's, when the puck's on his stick, it's going to be very difficult to get it off him, but he's not going to beat you with speed. So in terms of you're looking at your defensive matchups there, it's not a bad matchup for a guy like Mark Stewart because Mark Stewart's more physical than he is fast, and Jagr's not going to beat him that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Jagr's got 3 points in four games, and that was a good acquisition because several other teams, we were told by the TSN insiders especially, were in on Jagr. Washington, Pittsburgh, even Boston. So there were teams that wanted Jagr. So
we don't know why Florida did, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice coup for them. And I'm sure Jagr's liking the change in weather from the Garden State.
Yeah.
But, you look at this team and they're heading in the right direction. But to Richie's point, you're the Winnipeg Jets. You've played very well against Nashville. You could have easily got 2 points. You're a Drew Stafford post away from getting 2 points against St. Louis. So I have no problem. I think I'm going to go on a limb here. And I've been meaning to do this because I wanted to have a reason to shave my beard off.
Oh, God, please, dear God. Whatever you're going to say, please have
it. Let's hear it. I'm ready for this.
I'll shave my beard off if the Jets don't win.
Well, that's not much there. I'd rather, if the Jets don't win the next two games, you'll shave your beard off.
Sure, I'll do that. Okay. No, let's do one game.
It's just one game. They're not. Yeah, they're probably not going to be Tampa anyway.
Come on, I'm willing to put my beautiful 3-month-old beard on the line here.
I'm not sure if that beard would be described as beautiful.
I like it right now.
Remus said it was beautiful.
Can we videotape it and put it on LegalCurve.com?
Yeah, for sure.
Sure, why not?
Yes.
I don't know if anybody wants to see that. But
do you have scissors?
We're going to need a weed whacker for this thing.
It's a pretty hefty beard. That's very true. Look at it from the Jets sort of offensive lines perspective. Obviously, they won't have last change. Do you really care? Is Paul Maurice that? Does he care that much about matching lines here and who he can take advantage of, or does he look at that Panthers defense and say, especially if Ekblad's out of the lineup, which we're not sure yet, we'll know tomorrow. Obviously, it doesn't matter who we have out there, we can take advantage of any of these guys.
I think you probably want to get Wheeler, Stafford, and Shifley out against their slower unit, take advantage of the speed wise. That's what I'd say. So it depends on what they're pairing.
If
you're going to pair Gudbranson and Mitchell, you want to get out against
that guy. That's the slower unit.
Yeah.
Because Brian Campbell, he's having a great year, and he still has the wheels.
I mean,
he might be a little bit older.
Well.
He's still got wheels. So,
rather take advantage of, say, Frolik and Ladd and Lowry down low on a guy like Campbell because he won't compete hard against the board. That's what you want.
As an aside, I tweeted this out yesterday.
Did you tweet?
I like Adam Lowry more and more every game. And the fact that Lowry's playing on the top line now due to injuries with Ladd and Frolik, just made an incredible pass yesterday on Stempniak's goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just...
Well, I mean,
he's done a great job.
Is he okay, man?
I can't say enough about how he steps up face of all these injuries. I mean, again, I realize they lost the game, but I mean, Lowry is having a heck of a rookie season.
He's been good.
He's not a Calder candidate or anything like that, but I mean, the guy has such great hockey sense.
If you didn't watch the Jets night in, night out, you wouldn't be able to see all the little things that Adam Lowry does, especially for a guy who's in his rookie year.
And leads the Jets in hits.
Yeah, well, especially what we talked about that on Saturday's show, which, given his intelligence and given his hockey smarts, I was not as concerned about him getting that elevated role to playing in, you know, sort of where Brian in taking on Brian Little's role, because you knew offensively he wasn't going to be able to match with what Little brings, but that's fine. But he's so smart. And he's such a smart player that the little things that Brian Little does defensively in his own zone, I didn't think there was going to be much of a drop-off, if at all, because Lowry has that hockey sense that we talk about so often.
He's a 20-year-old playing like a 27-year-old. He really is.
Yeah, and I mean, the Jets certainly have one of these, you know, and they certainly seems to be a targeting of players with pedigrees of NHL fathers. Obviously, Lowry.
You okay, Drew?
Yeah, I just got something in my throat there.
Both of you here talking about Adam Lowry, you're going to start crying?
Getting Brendan
Lemieux. Was he at 15 points?
No, but that's not what we're talking about. You know what we're talking about. Thanks for throwing us right under the bus, Richard.
I missed one show. You guys are ready to...
Adam Lowry, he's such a good player. Sorry, guys. Grab me Kleenex. Yeah. Tearing up here. He's having such a good rookie season.
Why do we let Remus talk on the show? Let's go to break.
18 points, sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Oh. Don't shortchange him. Those 3 points.
Great hockey player.
He comes from such a good hockey family.
Cut Remus's mic.
I know. Unfortunately, he's responsible for cutting his own mic.
Sorry, both of you guys are tearing up.
Didn't you have Lowry on the round table recently?
He's actually on The World with Huss. It was a great interview a couple weeks ago.
Come on, Reem.
Bet you didn't make fun of Huss about that. God forbid you ever make fun of Huss.
And never makes fun of Huss.
Yeah, it's only us you feel.
Huss is, what is it, invincible?
I don't know. You just declared him that, so we'll go to break.
That's
on that
note.
That's
not the word I'm looking for.
We'll be saving that clip for the future.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Steve Goldstein, the Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Great, good to be here. How you doing?
Doing very well, thanks. Appreciate your giving us your time this evening. Steve, Panthers 6 points behind the Bruins with 16 games to play. Of those 16 games, 3 are against the Bruins, though, so the Panthers have that to look forward to. How surprised would you be to see all 3 of those games versus Boston be playoff meaningful, especially because the final one is the second last game of the season on April 9th?
Well, it would be great if that last one is. I clearly think... you know, the next two will be, because the Panthers, you know, it's about a week and a half till the first one, which is in Florida, and then 10 days later, that one in Boston in late March. So I clearly expect the first two to be, and I hope the last one is, now that it's a 6-point deficit. The Bruins had really, you know, a big weekend, and then obviously a huge win over Ottawa the other night. So the Panthers desperately need to win this game against Winnipeg and then have themselves a pretty good weekend. And next week, it's an incredible week at home for the Panthers. They play Montreal Tuesday, Detroit Thursday, Boston on Saturday. But with 16 to go, it's you know, it's in their hands. They can get it done if they can win these games.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite the original 6 week coming up next for the Panthers, and in the heart of a playoff race at that. So adding to the emotion there, Steve. Obviously, the Panthers were active at the trade deadline and surprised a lot of people in and around the NHL when they acquired Jaromír Jágr. Obviously, veteran is a kind way to describe him, but he certainly can still play the game. You know, was the trade made for just for this season and the playoff push, or do you think the Panthers want Jágr to be around for a longer period of time?
You know, I think that's definitely an option if he's in good enough shape, which it appears, you know, we don't know till you know, in the off season, but it appears that, you know, there's a good chance he will be. Yeah, I think there's a possibility that he will play beyond this year. And, you know, Huberdeau and Barkov have been just, you know, different players with Jágr. So he brings a lot to the table, and if he's in good shape, it would not surprise me if he signs another year. I know he loves it in Florida. He's setting a great example for these young players, and he kind of, you know, he said he feels like he's got new life. It's like a new situation for him with all these young guys. I think he's really enjoying it.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. The Jets obviously in Florida to play the Panthers tomorrow evening in a key playoff matchup for both teams. You know, we just talked about Jaromir Jagr, the Panthers acquiring him just before the trade deadline. How has he looked in the few games he's played as a Florida Panthers player?
Well, he's been super. You know, he's got four points, or 3 points in the four games, and Huberto and Barkov have really taken off. They've been as good as him, so that's been a big factor there. So, you know, he has a unique ability. You know, the Panthers obviously are a team that doesn't score that many goals, so he automatically steps in. He's one of their maybe the most skilled offensive player, one of the smartest. He's big and strong. He can still hold on to the puck. You can't take the puck from him. So he has looked really good, and in the four games he's played, you know, he missed the one game last week when the flu bug was going through the team. But he's had an offensive impact. 3 points in the four games, but an offensive impact on every game. He's been in front of the net on a couple of power play goals where, Brandon Peary was able to fire away in one of the games because they were paying so much attention to Jagr. So he's had a big impact on this team, there's no question.
You mentioned the Panthers aren't a team that scores very many goals, and that includes on the power play, despite what the influence Jagr's brought in the last few games. You know, in the bottom third of the league, both on the penalty kill and on the power play. Why the struggles on the Panthers' special teams this season?
Well, you know, the power play has been up and down, and they changed it after the All-Star break. They went to four forwards, kind of put one man up high instead of the traditional 2D at the points, and it's worked. You know, they're at about 24% since the All-Star break, which, as you know, is, you know, for a season, that's right at the league leaders. The penalty kill has been different. I think it's because a lot of guys have been in and out of the lineup. They really missed Willie Mitchell on the penalty kill. He and Kulikov had done a pretty nice job. And then you've got new forwards. You know, Kopetsky has been here, but he's going with McKenzie, so that's the top two forwards. And then you have guys like UC Jokinen and Dave Boland who would never play together. So I think some of it has been, through injuries and players out of the lineup and new players has really been the major reason why it hasn't been as consistent. At times it's been good, but it hasn't been consistent. But the good thing is coming down the stretch here, the power play has been really good. Early in the year, there were times where not only did they not score, but it actually gave the other team the momentum because the penalty kill just basically dominated the power play. Even now when they don't score, that's usually not the case. They've got puck possession. They get some pretty good looks.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida, talking about the Panthers ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Panthers game in South Florida. Steve, the Panthers have played two games since the night of the injured goaltender versus the Maple Leafs. Sort of a two-part question. Have you ever seen anything like that night in your career? And is it your expectation that Roberto Luongo will return tomorrow night versus the Jets?
No one really knows the answer to that. He hasn't committed for the game tomorrow, so we just don't know if he's going to be okay to play. You know, he's been out on the ice, he's practicing a little bit, so that's up in the air. It could also be a situation of how does he even feel, you know, tomorrow. I had never seen anything like that before, no, and I was actually wondering who would the backup goalie be, and I guess there was some confusion. You know, one referee told the Panthers one thing, one referee told them something else. The good news out of all of it for the league is that when they have these GM meetings here in Florida in a week or two, they're going to have something set. And my opinion is what they're going to do is everybody can pre-submit the one-day contract, if you will, of who the third goalie is. So you never have a situation like that, whether it's your goalie coach, whether it's your video guy, whether it's a guy sitting in the stands, which I know some teams, people may not realize, some teams actually have. Instead of the guy having to actually sign the deal and then you've got to submit it and the NHL needs to approve it and you need to go into the central registry, just have the guy in there beforehand, and that would solve the entire issue. But I had never seen anything like it. It was a crazy situation and really unfortunate because that game-winning goal that Toronto got, probably cost the Panthers at least 1 point and maybe two. It's a shame because, you know, they weren't really sure what the situation was, and had somebody, even if it was Rob Tallis, the goalie coach, in the game at that moment before Luongo came back from the hospital, there's a good chance he would have stopped it because obviously Montoya really, he couldn't move at all.
Luongo, obviously, in his first full year with the Panthers, in Panthers 2.0, is his second go-around with the team, to be more precise. How important has he been to the development of the Panthers' defense, providing the young defenseman with the knowledge that they have a top-10 goaltender behind them to clean up the errors that are bound to occur with a young team?
it's been a huge difference. And you know how you know it? You go back to last year when they made the deal for him at the deadline. And, you know, the Panthers were 29th in the league last year.
Sure.
Luongo played the rest of the season. Remember, they were playing with a lot of guys that you knew wouldn't be on the team this year or younger players. They went 6-7-1, actually, in the last 14 games last year when Luongo was in goal. So you could tell the impact that he's automatically had. And I'm hoping that it's almost the old blessing in disguise that, you know, this time off will kind of rejuvenate him. He hadn't been quite as good, and the D in front of him hadn't been quite as good, so that's part of it. But overall, defensively, the Panthers were so stingy. They were one of the top five-on-five teams in the league for much of the season. Over the last 3-4 weeks, that came down a little bit, partially because of injuries. You know, Mitchell out, and then Kulikov was suspended for the hit on Sagan. So they had some guys nicked up. So I'm hoping that with Luongo at this time off, whether it's 16 games left if he plays tomorrow, 15 left, whatever it is, that he gets red hot again and it can really carry this team.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Steve Goldstein, Fox Sports Florida, Florida Panthers broadcaster, joins us. Steve, sticking with or moving from the goaltender to the back end, Aaron Ekblad, the 2014 first overall draft pick. How good has he been night in, night out for the Panthers, and do you think he deserves to win the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year?
You know, I do, and the reason I do is because what he's doing as a defenseman at 18 and now 19 years old is unprecedented. I mean, playing 20 minutes a night, very often against the other team's top players, you know, it's not as much as offense. It's defensively what he's been doing is just, I mean, I've never seen anything like it in the league. So for that reason, I think he should win it. Now, obviously, Forsberg's had a great year, and his team is, you know, going to be top two or three, you know, in the entire NHL. In the standing. So he, you know, if he gets it, you can't go crazy complaining about it. But if I had a vote, I would go with Aaron Ekblad playing 22 minutes in this night, in this league, as a teenager, on a team that's competitive, playing big games every night. Just unbelievable what he's been able to do.
Certainly is. He's been tremendously impressive since being drafted first overall last year in Philadelphia. The you know, Panthers just have a collection of young talent that's probably the envy of the league in some respects. Nick Bjugstad's part of that collection, signed a 6-year contract extension in late December with the Panthers, leads the team with 40 points in 66 games. You know, obviously the Panthers believe strongly in him, as they should. Just how high do you think Nick Bjugstad's ceiling is in the NHL?
It seems like it's real high, doesn't it? I mean, He's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the shot. You know, he's still getting better in his own zone defensively. It's very different from what he played at the University of Minnesota in college. And remember, he's only played, you know, 150, if it is, NHL games. So he's still a work in progress. But all the raw talent is there. Super guy, as far as, you know, off the ice and wanting it and wanting to be in Florida, sign that 6-year contract, loves being a Panther. So, you know, you look at it, he's got 23 goals now after 16 last year. Maybe finishes with, you know, 26, 27 this year. So that's a 10-goal improvement. Can he make another jump by maybe 5 goals a year over the next couple of years and be a guy in the 30s? I think that's possible, especially if, you know, there's more talent around him. But I do think, you know, the sky's the limit for him. And the other guy that gets lost in the shuffle because he hasn't scored as much is Alexander Barkov. You know, he's the other center they have. He only has 10 goals, but defensively and hockey smarts and getting back in your own zone and working along the boards, I mean, Barkov is unbelievable. He's 19. He's played even less games than Bjugstad has played. He's only played 100 games in the NHL. So with those two guys in the middle, their future really looks solid. You know how hard it is to get those two guys, first and second line centers that are big and strong, can score, can really do everything. And it looks like both these guys, not complete yet, but over the next couple of years are going to be and are going to be forces in the middle for the Panthers.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Steve Goldstein, the Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, we've talked about a guy in his rookie year. We've talked about a guy in his second year. Got to ask you about a player in their third year. That's Jonathan Huberdeau. Is the game finally beginning to sort of slow down for him, allowing him to improve his point, you know, his point total, really get his feet under him and demonstrate why he was the third overall pick in 2011?
Yeah, he's really been coming on, and, you know, a lot of it has coincided with Jágr. It really has. As soon as Jágr got here, Huberdeau's taken off. I mean, he's been he's been phenomenal since Jágr got there and now starting to shoot the puck a little bit more. You know, he's a great passer, great setup guy. But the Panthers and Panther fans and the media and everybody really thinks and really wants him to be that top-flight scorer. Can he ever get 30, 35 goals? I mean, that remains to be seen. But he does have a career high in points, although it's a very modest, you know, first year was the lockout, so it was only 48 games. And last year he didn't have a real good year. But, you know, in his third year at age 21, it is his best offensive season, and he's playing his best offensive hockey now. So, to me, the talent is there. The want and desire is there. I mean, he wants to be a really good player, and he wants to win. And it's starting to come a little bit more over the last few weeks. So, put it this way. For me, I still want to see where Jonathan Huberdeau is in a year, in two, and in 3 years from now, because he's so young.
Still just scratching the surface, obviously. Yeah. Wanted to ask, we talked about the influence that Roberto Luongo has, you know, the steadiness in goal. Panthers also acquired a couple of veterans, Willie Mitchell and Sean Thornton. They're in their first years with the organization. How important have those two acquisitions been in the Panthers' dressing room, just in terms of the veteran influence and the stabilizing force that those two guys provide, having been through all sorts of the NHL battles?
Yeah, you know, it's been huge having those guys. I mean, Willie Mitchell is just, you know, a salt-of-the-earth guy, and so is Sean Thornton. I mean, loosening things up, defending teammates, whatever the case is, they've been a huge factor. You know, obviously they bring four Stanley Cups, and you throw Boland in there. You know, Dave Boland's been banged up, hasn't played all the games, but he's another guy that, you know, is kind of quiet, but there's a legitimacy to him. You know, Boland and Mitchell are brought in. They've won four of the last five Stanley Cups in the NHL, and these young guys see that. So, I think you throw a Derek McKenzie in there, too, who just really does it by example. I mean, he goes hard every shift on the penalty kill, and there's some speed. He actually leads the team in hits, Derek McKenzie. So that tells you a lot about him. But to the two guys you brought up, Mitchell and Thornton, you know, there's an expectation level. And they make that very clear. They're not afraid to speak up in the room. And they've brought a certain amount of legitimacy. It's been it's been as big as anything. Everybody talks about the young talent the Panthers have, and they do. And those guys are really good, and they are the best players on the team on the ice. But the leadership that those guys have brought to the table has been as big a factor as the talent level of the young guys.
Steve, we'll let you go on this last question. Gerard Gallant is in his first year behind the Panthers bench. Obviously, he came from Montreal where he was assistant coach and had a previous head coaching stop in Columbus a number of years ago. How would you evaluate the job he has done this year in his first season with the Panthers?
Yeah, I think he's done a super job. You know, there's not a lot of there's no real games or head games or anything with Gerard. You know, it's, hey, man, show up. Game's at 7:30. Play the game. You know? And you do that, and you play hard, and you play smart, and we got no problem. You know, when there's guys need a day off from practice, he's fine giving them a day off. You know? Morning skates are optional. He knows what it's like to be in the trenches, and he lets the guys kind of do whatever they need to do personally to prepare for the games. And I think that's a real big factor. With this team, they know exactly where he stands. And the other key is he's very patient with young players. You know, I go back to Saturday night against the Islanders. Bukestad makes a real bad play at his own blue line. Panthers are up 1-0. You know, Lee tips it away, and in comes Tavares on a breakaway and scores to tie the game. There wasn't even a word said. I was watching the bench. Gerard Gallant never even said a word to Nick Bukestad, because Gerard Gallant's been there. He knows Bukestad knew what to do. He knows he made a mistake. He knows he wasn't real smart at his own line, didn't make the simple play. He didn't need to say a word to him. Doesn't miss a shift. What happens 4 minutes later? Nick Bukestad scores to give him the lead again. So Gerard Gallant is able to live with those kinds of mistakes. It's part of the reason the Panthers hired him, when they knew they had so many young players. You know, there's a learning curve, there's a learning process there, and Gerard is willing to go through it with these guys.
It should be an interesting final month of the season in South Florida. It'll be an interesting game tomorrow evening when the Jets and the Panthers meet. Steve, appreciate your time. Steve Goldstein from Fox Sports Florida, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hey! Hey, everyone! Welcome to the Joe Pesci Show. I'm Joe Pesci, huh? Nice, huh? Got my desk here, got my mic here, got my ice pick here. I got everything! What am I, huh? Some violent, cannoli sucking criminal to you? Is that what I am? Huh? You're an American icon and I'm some ethnic moron? Is that what's going on?
That wasn't, in fact, Joe Pesci. That was Jim Brewer from Saturday Night Live. Just announced earlier today going to be coming to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club May 14th through 16th. You've seen him on SNL for a number of years, of course. You remember him from the movie Half-Baked. Jim Brewer, May 14th to 16th at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tickets available this coming Friday. Available online at rumorscomedyclub.com. Be sure to bookmark that website, check it out, and see Jim Brewer. Tickets are certainly going to go quickly for yet another fantastic concert series event at Rumors this coming May.
Yeah, I tweeted that out earlier when I saw that Rumors had announced that. I'm really pumped up about that. He was hilarious on Saturday Night Live. And he had his own show, I believe, on, was it MTV or HBO?
MTV, yeah.
Yeah,
right,
so
about that.
Did you just mention that?
No.
Okay, because I wasn't listening before. So, yeah, no, he's going to be awesome. When is it? May?
May 14th through 16th.
Yeah, I should have known. I tweeted it, but
yeah, it's okay. You tweet a lot of things that you don't even know what the hell you're talking about. Anyways, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Steve Goldstein for that interview that we conducted earlier about the Florida Panthers, the Jets, and the Panthers tomorrow evening. 6:30 p.m.
Yeah,
here
great,
on TSN 1290.
Great interview, Drew. And, you know, he mentioned that in the interview that, you know, Florida finished second last in the NHL last year. Just great. The ownership group is solidified there. Richie had a great interview with Doug Cifu earlier in the season. Just great to see this team heading in the right direction with all the youth, and they've brought in some veterans, as Steve Goldstein touched on. So it's nice because we all remember back in 96, Richie, with the Rats on the ice, how good it was when Florida was doing well. So you never want to see a team struggle for as long as they have.
You're right about that. Let's talk about the latest news from the Toronto Maple Leafs land. Comes out earlier today, the Maple Leafs decide to suspend Nazem Kadri for an additional 2 games. He'd already set out a 1-game suspension for being late to practice earlier. I believe it was on Sunday. He was late for practice, and he got suspended for the 1 game. Everyone expected him to be back in the lineup against the Buffalo Sabres tonight. And then all of a sudden, you know, right after the game day skate, it's announced that Nazem Kadri is going to be out for an additional 2 games. You know, Brendan Shanahan making the announcement. Here is the announcement from Brendan Shanahan.
This is not a completely unique situation. It's just, it's time for Naz. And we've, lots of players deal with it. It's his time now. It's his time to respond. He understands it. We want to work with him because he's an important part for us. But sweeping this under the rug would have been the easiest, but probably the weakest move for us. If this was a one-time thing, yeah, you'd love to handle this internally, have them take the guys to lunch, pay a fine, donate some money to charity, something like that. But this is a moment where a player has to look in the mirror and make some decisions.
Are you in agreement with how Brendan Shanahan and the Maple Leafs organization have decided to handle whatever this incident is and whatever this history is regarding Nazem Kadri?
Are we talking about the Maple Leafs again?
Hi, Noah.
Does anyone care about this team anymore? Nazem Kadri, they've disciplined him. Clearly, there's things we don't know about. Joffrey Lupo alluded to something happening in Winnipeg, being late for something, and they're disciplining a guy. And I love how, like, this day and age, you discipline somebody, and they're like, oh, have you gone too far? You know, will he come back? Yes. Clearly, there's a problem in the room. They have to make somebody accountable for their actions, and they're suspending him. Does it really matter? Well, they benefit from it because, A, they discipline him. They hope that it gets through to him. B, they have a better chance of losing and have a better draft pick.
I think it matters because I think that if you had asked people, you know, last week, who are the building blocks which the Maple Leafs would still think that they can build around, Nazem Kadri's name would be mentioned alongside Morgan Riley's as a guy that they still
maybe
not an equivalent, but a guy that they would still consider who has a future in Toronto as either a second or a third line center. Does this move put that future in doubt in your mind?
Because they discipline a guy? You, this day and age, you can't hold somebody accountable for their actions?
Well, how often do you hear about a team disciplining a player internally by suspending them for what will end up being 3 games?
Well, I think to a certain degree we saw that with Evander Kane. It wasn't 3 games, but he was suspended for the tracksuit gate
sure. And
all that.
And what team does Evander Kane play for now?
Well, exactly. But Nazem Kadri, he's had a pretty good year. He's got 16 goals, and he...
Tyler Seguin's alarm clock thing in Boston.
Yeah,
I mean, Winnipeg.
But to Richie's point, I think what Richie's trying to say is that the Maple Leafs are clearly out of it. They're not making the playoffs this year. Does it matter as far as the way the team's going to perform? They're obviously playing tonight. As you mentioned, he's not playing against Buffalo, but there were some rumors that Nazem Kadri might be one of those players that were traded. We heard Phil Kessel, Dion Phaneuf, basically every single Toronto Maple Leaf, with the exception of, we were told, Morgan Riley was one of the guys they had no interest in moving. But you look at, really, this to me, Richie, is just another, I guess, negative story coming out of Toronto for me. Last show, Drew, me and you, Richie was out of town, couldn't make it, but the comments from Phil Kessel, I mean, it's just one thing after another. And to me, I mean, if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, it's already been one of the worst years in the city's history as far as how poorly the team has done since Randy Carlyle was fired. But when it comes to Nazem Kadri, I mean, they said it. Peter Horacek said it himself. It's time for the guy to grow up, whatever he did. I mean, it's got to be pretty embarrassing, Richie, for Nazem Kadri to be suspended for 3 games. It doesn't really matter what he did. I mean, he might have gone out too late and missed a curfew. He might have missed a meeting. He might have not been dressed properly. He might have said something that he shouldn't have said to Brendan Shannon. Who knows? They're not going to ever tell us. But it's got to be pretty embarrassing for a guy. And it's not like Nazem Kadri is a rookie here. I mean, he's 24 years old. So it's time for Nazem Kadri to grow up. And again, I'm not piling on Nazem Kadri. I think he's a good player. He's got skill. I mean, not everybody can score 20 goals in the NHL, but he's got to grow up eventually.
You have anything to add to that, Richie? You're good with...
what's it going to be? That's the question. This is what they're really saying to you. What are you going to be, Nazem Kadri? Are you going to be a guy who occasionally scores 20 goals, gets 45, 50 points on a bad team and is a second-line center? Are you going to be a guy who can play top 6 minutes on a team that actually matters eventually? That's what they're saying. That's what they're trying to figure out. Well, I've never been his biggest fan. I think that he's, you know, he plays on the edge sometimes of dirty, but not consistently. He doesn't consistently perform as you would like. He has the skills, doesn't always seem engaged. Plays selfish at times. I don't love his game. I mean,
it seems only. I think it was
he can be a second line center in the NHL. I don't know if he can be in second line center on a good team.
It wasn't much more than 6 weeks ago that we spent the segment on Saturday's show discussing the potential, because there was all the talk that the Leafs were about to re-sign Kadri and Bernier to long-term deals. Now you can certainly ask legitimate questions about if they either of those two players even has much of a future in Toronto.
I think this
Does
changes.
Anybody have a future in Toronto?
Well, that's the thing, Richie. I mean, like... You
would have thought... 6 weeks ago, you would have thought Kadri and Bernier may have had a future in Toronto.
There was a reason why I didn't think, Rich, that Phaneuf and Kessel were going to be traded. They have to have some players. Like, I mean, if you start trading all of these, and you could say that Kessel isn't a top 20 forward, or Phaneuf isn't a number one defenseman, but you trade some of those. If you think it's bad now, imagine no Kessel, no Phaneuf, no Kadri. I mean, these are their top players. James Van Riemsdyk. They have to build their team around something. No offense to Morgan Riley, you can't build your team around Morgan Riley. I don't think he's that good that you can build your team. I think
you can build your team around him and other players.
Right.
He's good.
Right.
He's really good.
I think that Brendan Shanahan, Dave Nonis, we're not sure, Richie, if Dave Nonis is going to be part of it, but who's getting moved? Because
I'm
not sure.
Why is Shanahan announcing this, not Nonis?
Because nobody knows who's in charge there. I mean,
I can't believe they're still in the news. I mean, it's unbelievable. If you watch this team play, it's a joke.
Well, I think if any team comes out and announces a player suspended for 3 games, it's in the news. A lot of the other stuff I agree with, that there's no reason for it to be talked about. But I think that anytime a team self-imposes a three-game, what ends up being a three-game suspension, it will become, it's newsworthy in the NHL these days.
And the question is, you know, I just hate the articles or the people insinuating, oh, you know, will they risk losing him now and losing it, you know, losing what he'll become. And God, you know what? For God's sake, I mean, if the team is taking these measures, Drew, to your point, clearly there's something going on there. And does he man up? Is he going to man up or not?
Well, speaking of...
Does he want to be a player? Does he want to be a good player, top six guy? He's drafted in 2009, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seventh overall, Rich.
Let's talk about, I mean, while we go to break, let's play for Jeff O'Neill. He was on TSN 1050, Leafs Lunch, as he always is. He has an interesting story to tell about being a young player who may not have been fully committed to his craft. We'll play that heading to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek.
When I talk about not, like, having regrets when I retired playing, I thought to myself, like, why wouldn't I just keep doing that? Just be an athlete, work hard. And because I was good time Jeff, always good time Jeff, and non-good time Jeff was a damn good player, and I hate myself every day for not being that guy more often, and that's why I have regrets. And as far as the president of the team, he was my, you know, I'm supposed to draw on my own personal experiences. He was my left winger, my line mate, and he was a pain in the ass. Because you know why? He was in the prime of his career. And when you're in the prime of your career, you know what you don't want to do? You don't want to babysit a 19-year-old punk. And that's pretty much what I was. And day after day, don't do this and don't do that. I'd miss a pass in overtime or something. One-timer passes to Brendan Shanahan. One-timer passes to Brendan Shanahan. And I'm thinking to myself, why the hell am I doing this? And then, you know what? He scores 44 goals in the season. And then 20 years later, he's going into the Hall of Fame. You know who he invited? Me, to go to his little party there beforehand. And they had a little video tribute. And then this kind of is one of those moments where you're like, yeah, it's all making sense now. It's a video thing of his whole career, and there was only one Hartford Whaler clip in the whole highlight thing. Do you know what it was?
What's that?
It was me passing him a one-timer and burying it into an empty net with Hartford Whaler jerseys on. So these young guys these days, they think these old grumpy guys are crazy, but they're all running the league. And there's a reason. It's because they want to win. That's it. So they're not doing anything to anybody to try to piss them off. They're doing it because they want to allow everybody the best chance to win. And that's the bottom line, man.
Yep. Well
I'm an
said,
old
buddy.
Man now. I'm fat and overweight. I got kids. If I could talk to myself that was 19 years old, I would ream myself out. That's what I talk about. Who the hell wants to play an NHL career and look back and lie in bed at night and say, you know, God damn it, why didn't I do that better? Because it sucks.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
25 minutes before 8 in the evening, you're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This segment brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. A very important note, this coming Sunday, March the 15th, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Sherwood Hockey presents Jacob Trouba in-store at Royal Sports, 750 Pembina Highway. Again, Sunday from 1 to 3, come meet Jacob Trouba, get some autographs, and participate in a saucer pass combination. Jacob Trouba again.
Competition?
Some sort of competition regarding saucer passes.
You say combination, though.
Did they say combination?
You hungry?
Oh, I am hungry. I meant competition. The important thing to note, though, is Jacob Trouba, in-store, Royal Sports, 1 o'clock, Sunday, 750 Pembina Highway.
Awesome.
Good.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. Anyways, whatever.
Seems what?
I was going to say he seems like a decent enough guy, but what the hell do we really know from this far away?
Well, Drew...
Let's move on to a lot of teams that are in the running in the Stanley Cup playoffs, currently in playoff spots, have a number of significant injuries. Want to go through the list of them and talk about which player coming back would mean the most to his team. So we'll start with, in alphabetical orders, the two players that are out in Anaheim, Sammy Vatanen and Matt Beleski. In Boston, David Krejci. Chicago Blackhawks, Patrick Kane. Obviously, he's not expected back until...
You never know.
But not expected back until a couple rounds into the playoffs. Johan Franzen, he's out with a concussion. Seems unlikely, getting more and more unlikely that he's going to play anytime soon, given that he's been out since, I believe, January. Tanner Pearson broke his leg against the Jets a number of months ago now. He's getting closer, starting to skate on his own. Jason Zucker in Minnesota, he was leading the Wild in goals when he was injured with a broken collarbone. Henrik Lundqvist, New York Rangers goaltender, all-world goaltender, has that scary injury, a strained blood vessel. No real sign of him coming back soon. Kevin Shattenkirk, abdominal surgery, should probably be back in the next month or so. And in Vancouver, Ryan Miller sprained his knee, of course, a number of weeks ago, and he should be back sometime, they would think, before the end of the season
Drew,
or mid-April.
Drew, were you injured when you thought of this segment?
You know, I knew you were going to throw me under the bus. You're nothing if not predictable in that, you know, I put the segment into
that's,
the show.
Richie, that's pretty good.
I put the segment
Did
into
you have
the
a broken finger when you're just typing this up on the computer? Like, you're like, I don't know what to do.
I put the segment into the show plan. I send out an email, says, if you have any thoughts or concerns, let me know. I text you for your response. Your response was, show plan looked good, brah. Way to go. And now you throw me under the bus.
Well, Drew, first of all, you know Richie and I don't have rational thoughts.
No.
So, no, but I mean, let's be honest here. There isn't a right right answer when you're talking about all of these teams. And as far as which player is going to be, I guess, received the best and has been missed the most, and what team is going to benefit from that player? Let's be honest here. Well, going through this list, Richie, I mean, you could easily just take the players that have the best offensive impact. So Patrick Kane, David Krejci, to me, I mean...
But think about the replacements of all these guys, Izzy. Lundqvist, Talbot's been good, right?
Yep.
Francis replaced by Cole.
Yep.
Kane, they get Vermette. I mean, he's not replacing... Vermette's not replacing Kane, but he's helping the team. Boston gets Connolly, and he's gone, and Krejci is a huge one there. Sami Vatanen, though, people don't know a ton about. He's very good, and they miss him.
Right, and James Wisniewski just came back. They acquired him.
He's not very good.
No, but I'm just saying, they yes. acquired him along with... trading away Ben Lovejoy for I can't think of it right
Simon
now.
Simon Dupre.
Not a guy that is necessarily going to stay in the top six, especially when Vatanen comes back.
Be in the top six.
But when Vatanen comes back and Lindholm and so I'm just saying he's bottom pairing defenseman for that team. Because
so?
He was a bottom pairing defenseman for Pittsburgh. I'm not a big Dupre fan. I like the trade for Pittsburgh.
He can be a four. I don't love him. I like Lovejoy though.
I think Pittsburgh Lovejoy traded him because they like Pouliot. But I think when you're talking about these, okay, let's break it down here because you went alphabetical, mm-hmm. right? So as far as Boston's concerned, Krejci's got to be healthy. We talked about this on Saturday's show. He's got to be healthy if this team wants to win in the first round and go further in the playoffs. So to me, that's a big one. But to Richie's point, Henrik Lundqvist, arguably one of the best goaltenders still in the NHL, I would argue that he is. Carey Price and Pekka Rinne might be having better years. Mm-hmm. He's still a top three, at the very least, top five goalie. Took them to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. So to me, Cam Talbot doesn't have a lot of NHL playoff experience, so you want him to come back. I mean, all of these injuries are significant. Patrick Kane, he was leading the NHL in points before he went out.
Well, look at this division right now, guys. I mean, St. Louis's goaltenders, I don't trust. I mean, the Jets are here, they're there, who knows? Nashville's falling off. I mean, kind of opening up for Chicago, isn't it?
It's, you know, I think you can make the argument it's opening up for Minnesota to some regards as well.
Yeah, you could. I mean, you could make the argument probably it's opening up for anybody.
Sure.
But I do think that's a good point, Drew, for sure, and especially that Minnesota gave Chicago a lot of problems last year in that five-game second-round series. Very close games, and you could argue that, I mean, Minnesota is certainly better this year.
Yeah, certainly far better. And then, I mean, Jason Zucker, like I said, out of the lineup.
I mean, the Jason Zucker injury, Drew, hurts, but you got in Chris. Again, it talks about these injuries were
addressed at the trade deadline.
You know, what happened prior to the trade deadline. So Chris Stewart slides into where a guy like Zucker would play, or Bergenheim, for example, right? You know, Zucker's a good skater, good shot, good player. But, I mean, Stewart and Bergenheim are certainly more than sufficient replacements, if not better.
I think, Rich, you got it. As far as the goaltending injuries, and Ryan Miller, again, we've seen him steal playoff series for the Buffalo Sabres. That's years back now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out for him last year in St. Louis. But if you don't have Ryan Miller, and again, Eddie Lack used to play for the Moose. He's done a good job there, and Markstrom was called up from the AHL. But to me, the goaltenders, I look at those injuries, and to me, those are significant. Sure, a guy like Tanner Pearson, part of that 70s line, had a great rookie year. I think he's actually still a rookie this year. So you want to add him to your second line because Dwight King's on the second line LA. He's been great with Toffoli and Carter. So, I mean, all of these injuries are significant, and obviously these injuries, there are varying degrees to how long these guys are going to be out for. Kane is going to probably be out for at least another month. Guys like Buff and Little on the Jets, they're going to be back in the next couple of weeks. Little might play tomorrow.
I'm just surprised Drew's able to put together the list in alphabetical order.
But I'm not as dumb as I look, you know, sometimes. I'm handsome and smart. It's a rare devilish combination.
As an aside, has anybody tried to navigate this new NHL.com with the stats? I don't know what they did, but it doesn't make any sense to me. It seems very difficult to navigate.
I've been
not
on
the
there.
Not that like, the new stats are good to have them on there, but I'm talking about just the NHL. It seemed that they came out a little early with this new format.
Well, you have to use the filter button. I think that's your friend, is the filter button.
And yeah, I don't know.
I think it's also like riding a bike. The more times you do it, it just gets easier.
Yeah, that would be too. Do you know how to ride a bike?
No.
Do you really?
As he just bought a big bike 2 years
ago. If I'm 32 years
old. Oh, that's right. You bought a new bike a couple years ago and drove it three times. I forgot about that.
He just drove right over you right now there, Izzy.
I'm a little bit worried that Drew asked me if I know how to ride a bike.
You'd be surprised at the number of people, including one person who is on this station regularly. No, that's not true. His sister doesn't know how to ride a bike. Sorry, I forgot.
I can understand swimming, but again, I don't want to get into this, but yes, I can ride a bike.
Okay, that's good to know. So the answer is Krejci. Is that the answer we're going with there?
Well, I mean,
Lundqvist.
I quickly want to get into Boston before you ride me over with your bike, Drew. And that is, you look at their turnaround game on Saturday, right? The afternoon game. Scoring late with Marchand, getting the overtime goal, coming back, winning on Sunday.
We were watching it here in studio that Saturday.
If you look at Krejci now, adding him to the... Again, I mean, you guys aren't big as big on Boston as I am, but I don't want to play Boston if I'm any team, because you have a bunch of guys... You have a bunch of good players. You have a bunch of good players who know what to do when the pressure comes. You know, Marchand, and you can say what you want about Marchand, say what you want about Lucic, but Bergeron, Krejci, you're going to trust those guys in big situations. Claude Julien, and Chara, older shirt, Dougie Hamilton. I mean, there is talent there. So you're telling me you want to work your butt off all year and then play Boston in the first round? I just don't think that's the case. And there's a certain style of play that they can try and dictate. You know, they're not the quickest team. A guy like Ryan Spooner, though, he got a couple goals against Ottawa yesterday. He's a good player. He's a good skater. I liked his attitude. That team's going right now. So you had David Krejci into the mix. Louis Eriksson with a nice one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Krejci is a big one there. And I also think Vatanen, because I don't love Anaheim's defense, and he's a very good offensive player. And I think that they miss him, especially in the transition game.
I think Louis Eriksson's actually had a bit of an underrated season.
Lately, he's been better.
Mm-hmm.
I think his lack of success as a top six right winger has really hurt their progress.
He's going to get 20 goals this year, though.
But he's talented enough. If you can skate as well as Louis Eriksson can, you can shoot as well as he can, you should score 25 to 30. You should score 30, I think, personally.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot that Riley Smith has been on the first line for most of the year when he was the player in that second trade that they didn't expect.
And now the contract he signed and Torrey Krug signed. So, the group knows they're together.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't sleep on Boston. I think they're going right now.
Well, it'll be interesting. We'll find out the regular season, I believe, ends in a month from today, Saturday, April 11th. So the playoffs are...
Imagine that Jets-Flames game
would be... Yeah, it's an afternoon game.
Yep.
It's a 2:00 start.
It's also Blake Wheeler bobblehead night.
Oh, okay.
Or day.
Day, yes. The Jets play they play two Saturday afternoon games this all year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one's the week before against Vancouver on the 4th.
I don't mind that. As a hockey fan, I don't like the Sunday game. I mean, hockey's a Saturday night.
Yeah,
it's a Saturday day thing.
Something about a Saturday afternoon to end the season, though, that I don't know.
I mean, the Jets played Saturday afternoon playoff games before they left.
Yeah, that's true. Against the against the Red Wings, that game 3 was a Saturday afternoon, wasn't it?
Regardless, happy hump day, Drew.
It is Wednesday. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Reminder, in case you missed it on Monday, the Coaches Summit featuring H&L and Paul Maurice. Immediately following us, a replay of the Coaches Summit, 8 p.m. tonight on this fine radio station.
When are we going to have the Illegal Curve Summit? Because let me tell you, we need one.
Yeah, I think we've had it. we've had it a couple times where we've almost decided just to abandon the whole enterprise altogether. But something keeps us together. I'm not sure what that is. This segment brought to you by
Friendship.
Friendship, is that what it is? Okay. This segment brought to you by Not Auto Corp.
Love.
Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. Ezzy and I were just chuckling about this before when you stepped out of the room, Richie. Did you hear the shot to the funny comment that Dennis Bayak got on Darren Ping last night during the broadcast?
No, I didn't.
During the first period where that puck came in between the benches where Nighty and Ping were. Nighty obviously doing the game for TSN 3 and Darren Ping doing the game, I guess, for Fox Sports Midwest there. Nighty, you know, ducks out of the way and they mentioned that Darren Ping was there also, and he, you know, and Shane says something along the lines of, "Don't worry, Darren Ping's here to make the save for me," and then Dennis goes, obviously you didn't see him play goal very much. It was a pretty good line there by Dennis, and I'm sure Dennis and Darren have been through the wars on more than one occasion.
Richie, it was funnier to see it live, not like Drew retelling it, because that was unfunny.
Somehow you made that funny joke unfunny.
I'll tell you what. Have you had the opportunity to go back to Saturday's show? Remus, you can vouch for me on this one.
Okay, let's hear about this.
Yeah.
Ezzy's terrible story that he told on Saturday's show.
Bad story, Ezzy?
He tried to tell, I mean, his intentions were good in that he was trying to tell a story about Remus doing something nice for somebody.
Whoa. But clearly it was a lie.
It wasn't a lie. It just wasn't that nice.
Oh, really? What was it?
It was a bad, it wasn't a nice thing, and it took like 5 minutes to tell.
I think going to get beer from someone's car for the hockey team is a nice thing, and I was trying to compliment Remus.
Who was responsible for it?
Michael.
No,
so why
no,
is that
no,
nice thing?
No.
I just went to, I came in, went to the room, I was like, oh, want to go to my car to get the beer? I was like, yeah, sure. Like, you're acting like I went to like Mount Everest to get a case of beer.
Did you
I just
have
went
a beer?
To the parking lot.
Did you have a beer?
I had one, yeah.
So then it was in your personal best interest to get a beer. It's kind of a selfish move, if anything.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Why wouldn't I go get the beer?
when there's beer to be had versus no beer to be had, you go and have the beer.
I'm just shocked if Ezra was in the vicinity that it somehow was still in the car.
I wasn't going to the parking lot to get something I didn't want to have.
It was a pretty long, drawn-out telling of the story as well.
Whatever.
All right. Hang on. We're an hour and 52 minutes through the show, and I think we've all pissed each other off. So we're right on schedule as normal here. Let's start with some playoff team news and notes from around the league.
Sorry, Drew. Brendan Shanahan wants to talk to you outside.
That's fine. We'll start with Alan Walsh. He takes a shot at the Montreal Canadiens for scratching P.A. Parenteau for a fourth straight game.
Did he tweet about the goal yesterday?
He didn't tweet about the goal.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know about Alan Walsh.
That he didn't tweet about the goal? Oh, the Pavlik goal, as you're saying, because that's right. That's his, client as well.
He did tweet out about Michael Frolik scoring.
No, but the point is he only tweets out and it's good stuff about his client. That's the point. Or it's in his client's best interest. That's all.
Here's Bob McKenzie talking about Alan Walsh's tweet on TSN 690 from earlier today.
That's always the question that gets asked when an agent like Alan Walsh, and I think he's probably the only agent that does that I can recall. He did it with Jaro Halak. I think he's done it with a couple of other his clients. And that's the question that always gets asked, is to make it more difficult. And that's certainly the party line from people who don't like it. I would say this, that Walsh probably knows his clients well enough to know when to do it, when not to do it, and that the clients, and certainly in the case of Halak, I know for a fact that he was happy that Walsh stood up and took the bullets and created the controversy and did all the things that a player really can't do because he's got to stay within the thing. I don't think it makes if you're asking me if I think Alan Walsh tweeting is going to get P.A. Parenteau back in the lineup any quicker than he otherwise might, no. Are you asking me, is it possible it could be longer? I suppose. But usually in these situations, I'm guessing that Walsh probably assesses the situation pretty well and realizes that a client may be in tough at the best of times and decides to go ahead and do it. And I know a lot of people in hockey don't like it. And I probably, when it first started happening, I probably thought, you know what, that's not the way you go about it. But the more I see, the more I realize that the clients in these cases are actually happy that somebody is out there swinging the bat for them that they can't swing.
Alan Walsh can tweet whatever he wants, obviously. It's a free Twitter world out there. But P.A. Parenteau's had an awful year. He's got 6 goals.
Not as bad as Danny Briere.
But, you know, like...
they were traded for each other,
I mean,
of course.
This is a former 20-goal guy that was supposed to be, in theory, a top 6 forward, at the very least on the third line, Richie. He can't even get into the lineup.
What it was that Patrick Roy and P.A. Parenteau hated each other, and Daniel Briere and Michel Therrien hated each other, so they needed to trade these guys for each other. That's what happened. Like, that's the end of the story, as you really.
Right.
So, I mean, to your point, he hasn't been that good, but I don't think either of them expected either player to be particularly good. They were taking a chance that a change of scenery would be okay, but both are not the most effective. Parenteau's the better player of the two now, but that's only because Breer's fallen off as much as he has.
Right, and an agent tweeting that he's upset that his player has been benched, to me, is useless. I mean, talk to your player or talk to the coach in private. Like, what does it help to tweet about it publicly? Like, Michel Therrien's not going to see the tweet. I don't even know if he's on Twitter. It's not like he's going to see the tweet and say, oh, P.A. Parenteau's agent, Alan Walsh, is upset that he's not playing. I think I'll play him now.
Well, I'm sure that just Michel Therrien will ignore it summarily, but I'm sure he also knows that Walsh tweeted what he tweeted. And I think it probably just means that Parenteau will spend even more time in the doghouse.
Right. I honestly don't think Therrien cares at all about what players' agents are tweeting.
No, but I don't think it helps Parenteau's cause necessarily.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it
so why even tweet it, right?
Yeah.
You would say it wouldn't help?
Yeah, it wouldn't help.
Yeah, exactly. So why even tweet it is a fair question you have there, Ezzy. From San Jose, Richie, and this is a fastball right up here at the heart of the plate for you here. Bay Area News Group columnist Mark Purdy reports that the reason the San Jose Sharks didn't trade Antti Niemi at the trade deadline is in part because the Sharks veterans went to Doug Wilson and convinced him not to.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Wilson making any decisions that he wants anyways. This team's just spinning around, going nowhere. It's been like that for years. So they don't, I mean, the veterans, of course the veterans want to win, so they're not convinced Stalock's good enough, so why would they, of course they, are the inmates running the asylum there? And if you don't trust the inmates, why are they running the asylum?
It seems to be an apt description of it, is that the inmates are running the asylum, as he.
But you don't want them. You're taking off the captaincy off both those guys.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't understand how that organization still exists as it does.
We'll leave it on that point. That's it for this Wednesday edition of...
Well, Drew, you should know before we go that we tried to trade you last week, but Remus said he wants to keep you.
Thank you, Remus. I appreciate it. But you guys were willing to sell me probably pretty short.
Oh, we'd never trade you.
Richie? Three Timbits and a glass of water.
That's what I figured. Anyways, big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Big thanks to our guest, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, and Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.